It's time for our weekly look at Congress. Paul Singer is off this week. We're joined today by USA Today congressional correspondent Susan Davis.
After a mass shooting near Santa Barbara this weekend, one father told the public and Congress that the responsibility for his son's death is in the hands of politicians.
Also, the oldest member of Congress and one of the last World War II veterans in office lost to his primary challenger last night. He's the first incumbent in this election cycle so far to be pushed out.
We round up the happenings in Congress every week at this time. Susan Davis joins us now. Susan, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me on.
Well, last week we talked about widespread wins for establishment Republicans over Tea Party candidates in primaries around the country. And we have the flip side of that narrative right now with Representative Ralph Hall of Texas losing to a Tea Party challenger who spent a lot of his own money on the campaign. Does that change the main thrust of the message from last week?
Not necessarily. I think Texas is a little bit of a different case. And even so much of this narrative of Tea Party versus establishment, not all of it fits into one very neat, clean box. What was interesting in Texas, and I think part of what contributed to Ralph Hall's defeat yesterday, was the very nature of a runoff election. Most politicians don't want to go into a runoff, particularly one in the summertime when even fewer people are going to turn out, and often the people that do turn out tend to be more anti-incumbent than not. This doesn't necessarily fit into the neat Tea Party narrative because Ralph Hall also had a number of Tea Party support. In some ways, you could maybe attribute this to Texas always doing it their own way, but he had the support of the NRA, which is a hugely influential group. He had the support of Ron Paul, which obviously has a significant amount of support within Texas as well. And the U.S. Attorney John Radcliffe, who beat him, isn't necessarily, he served in the Bush administration. He was a wealthy self-funder. He wasn't necessarily the archetypal anti-establishment candidate. Ralph Hall is, I believe he's 91 years old. He wasn't necessarily prepared for this campaign. I think it snuck up on him a little bit. And one of the lessons that we have learned from Tea Party uprisings is that if incumbents don't watch their back, they're much more vulnerable.
Well, and one of the other side notes of this is that due to Hall's loss, starting next year, there aren't going to be any more World War II veterans serving in Congress. Did they play an important role in the shaping of the legislature? What is the significance of him not being there?
I think it's hugely significant. It's also just an interesting historical mark. John Dingell, who is the longest-serving member of Congress in history and also a World War veteran, is retiring this year. So at the start of the next Congress in January, it will be the first time that World War II veterans are no longer serving. A couple of names that stick out to me when you think about World War II veterans and what they did. Bob Dole, a former Senate Majority Leader, was a World War II veteran and to this day still does a lot of advocacy work for those veterans. Senator Daniel Inouye, who was the head of the Appropriations Committee and was hugely influential in the development of Hawaii and Alaska, who passed away last year, was a World War II veteran. Most recently, Frank Lautenberg, who was a Democratic senator, who played a lot of roles in anti-smoking legislation and advancing public health causes. So their legacy is very real in Congress, and I think it's, on the whole, many of the World War II legislators that served were some of the most distinguished of the modern era.
Yeah, so you really make it sound like an era is coming to a close and maybe another beginning with this passing.
I think it's true, and what's interesting is we've certainly seen the number of veterans in Congress dip, and I've written about this, and part of it is just the reality of not having a draft anymore. You're going to naturally have less veterans because it's a volunteer army. But also what we've seen is the number of veterans that are rising and that dominate among the veterans in Congress now are Iraq and Afghanistan veterans who bring a whole different legacy and a whole different view of foreign policy to Congress, and I think we're just at the beginning stages of how they are going to shape policy over the next 20, 30 years the way that World War II veterans did in the post-war era.
Well, moving on to some big news from the weekend, a young man shot and killed three people in East La Vista, California. And one of the people killed was 20-year-old Chris Martinez. And his father, Richard, has gotten a lot of attention for blaming politicians with a lot of emotion, a lot of passion for his son's death on national television. And we have a little bit of a clip.
Chris died because of craven, irresponsible politicians and the NRA. They talk about gun rights. What about Chris's right to live? When will this insanity stop? When will enough people say, stop this madness? We don't have to live like this.
Obviously, a lot of pain there. It's difficult to listen to. Will it affect the politics of gun control?
The short answer is no. And I agree with you that it's very heartbreaking to have to listen to that, and particularly any parent that has lost a child, and particularly in a very violent way, as his son lost his life. But it doesn't change the dynamics in Congress. And I would say why this shooting is no more different than the others is I don't think if Congress was not going to act after the Newtown shootings that killed, you know, 20 first graders, I'm not sure that the latest is going to be the thing that changes the dynamic. The votes haven't changed. They still don't have 60 votes in the Senate. Harry Reid has said if he can get to 60, he'll bring it back and they'll pass it, but they don't have that support. The House of Representatives, controlled by Republicans, that have never held a vote on any new gun legislation in this Congress post the Newtown shootings. And I don't see that changing. And I don't get the sense that there's a lot of urgency within Congress to act. And quite frankly, they just don't have the majority support that it would take to pass significant new gun legislation. And it is very true to say that the NRA still remains one of the most powerful lobbying forces in Washington. So for advocates that are seeking tighter gun laws, it's going to be a very long, protracted fight, and it's not going to happen this year.
So does that mean that gun laws in America are the way people want them to be? Is that the conclusion we can draw from the fact that nothing new has been pushed through?
What's fascinating about it, too, is where we have seen legislation is on the state level. And I think in some respects, that's the way Congress would prefer it. At least Republicans in Congress would prefer to have states play a more active role in deciding how they want their own gun laws to be. But what is really stunning is more gun laws have been loosened or expanded since Newtown versus tightened in other words, there's been less gun control since Newtown. And if anything, there's been laws to make it easier to get guns or loosen restrictions on reporting requirements in different states. So I think it's two things. I think do not underestimate the power of the gun voter. I think that people that are motivated by gun rights vote on that single issue. I can't think of perhaps maybe abortion, but I think guns is even more powerful than abortion on a single vote issue in that it drives more people to the polls. So I think the passion factor, and it may seem unlikely given when you hear the passion in the voice of people like that father that we just heard the clip of, but we've seen it time and time again that the gun rights voter shows up. And they show up in large numbers. So I do think it does create a vacuum in which, even though we have polls that show a majority of Americans support things like tighter background checks or maybe tougher sales for assault-like weapons, it doesn't translate into political reality, in part because the people that are more likely to actually show up and cast a ballot do not feel that way.
Well, there has been some movement last week in Congress on legislation affecting the NSA and the House passing some restraints there. What was decided?
They passed the bill that they passed, which has a good chance of actually becoming law because there's a companion bill in the Senate and they're going to take that up later this summer, essentially ends bulk data collection, which it takes a role out of the NSA that was just sweeping up all of these records. Now, it doesn't necessarily end the practice. What it does do is it creates a new check on the NSA power, where phone companies still have to keep their phone records for 18 months. That's current law. That didn't change, and that won't change. But now the NSA will have to go through, get a court order, and make the case for why they would need, you know, for instance, my phone records if they had reason to believe that I was communicating with forces, terroristic alliances in or outside the United States. So it creates a new check on that power, but it doesn't fundamentally change their ability to do it. And I think we saw in the closing days before the House passed that, a lot of the original supporters pulled back their support. They dropped from the bill some provisions that would have put a public advocate on the court. They also dropped reporting requirements that would require the government, at least on an annual basis, to give us a sense, not tell us what numbers they're looking at, but tell us how many, so we get a scope of the size of this program. In the Senate, Patrick Leahy, who's the Senate Judiciary Chairman who has the jurisdiction over this bill, says he's going to try and put those provisions back in. And we also saw a lot of the tech companies pull their support. Originally, Google, Facebook, Twitter had signed on to this bill, but they now see language that they believe is a loophole that would allow the government to look at internet data. Now, the government and lawmakers who support the bill say they're overreading it, and that's not the intention, but they withdrew their endorsement and said they would like to see tighter language in there before they can support the final bill. So it has some hurdles to go through, but this is initially what President Obama asked for, and there's support for it in the Senate. And if it does make it over the final hurdle, mm-hmm. it will be one of the few accomplishments of this Congress, and it will pretty much be the only congressional response to the Edward Snowden leaks.
And we leave it there. Susan, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
We were talking to Susan Davis, congressional correspondent for USA Today. Paul Singer will be back with us next week. We look at the week in Congress every Wednesday at this time.